Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are
Welcome
you?
Welcome back, everyone. Oh, I'm good. Thanks.
You're good.
Welcome back, everybody, to Double Indemnity, the podcast. I'm Emily Glazer.
I'm Jonathan Pyle.
Here we like to talk about recent movie releases.
Releases.
I don't know why I always say podcast. I always say that instead
you
of podcast.
Do. It's because it's Podrick.
Oh, yeah, because of Podrick. Because of Pod. We've already talked about that. But
we have.
Basically, we like to talk about new movies that have come out, and I am a movie enjoyer, prefer eating popcorn of anything else. Jonathan, what are you? What makes you qualified to talk about movies?
Movie buff. Pretty movie much boof. Know every movie ever in existence.
That is absolutely not true.
It's not true.
Anything made before like 2005, you get iffy on.
1995.
You weren't even alive in 1995.
I know.
Yes. So just so everybody knows, we're doing an Oscar series right now. So right now we are covering the last movie we're going to talk about before the Oscars, which are next weekend. And we're talking about what movie, Jonathan?
Women Talking.
Women Talking. The other movies we've covered are Triangle of Sadness, Tar, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Banshees of Inisherin.
Avatar.
Avatar, Way of Water.
And Tar Squared.
Yeah. And then what else? I think that was it. And
All
then we'll
Quiet
have this
on
one.
The Western Front.
Oh, and we did All Quiet on the Western Front as well. So we've covered most of them. The only movies that we didn't get to before the Oscars ceremony next weekend are movies that we saw before we even started the podcast. And to be honest, I don't feel like watching them again. So
no,
those are just going to be unspoken of. But at least when we do talk about the movies and everything that won Best Picture, we can at least talk about with an understanding that we've seen every single movie that got nominated. So that's nice.
I like doing that every year. I haven't done that many years before, seen all the movies that were nominated.
Me neither, yeah.
The ceremony.
So it's kind of fun. Like usually, like last year, what won Best Picture?
Coda.
Coda won, yeah. See, I hadn't seen Coda. So I was like, oh, I know it's a really good movie and it's about a deaf family, but other than that, I didn't know anything.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so I do think that was... What was I going to say? I don't remember what I was going to say.
No, you didn't.
But moving
me.
On, yeah. So next week, we are actually not going to be reviewing a movie. We're going to be talking about the winners of the Oscars. So look forward to that.
Yes, very much.
But this is concluding our series. So go listen to all the other ones if you want to hear what we thought about all the other ones.
We've got a lot of good thoughts.
All the thoughts.
Thoughts for
quality
your thoughts.
I have a coffee right now, which is a terrible decision because
That's
it's the
true.
Afternoon. But
be wired.
I recently got like a mocha pot. I don't know if people know what a mocha pot is, but it's like those little silver coffee pots that you see people like
it's
all
like
the sophisticated people always have sitting on their stoves
it's
all
like
the
a
time.
Silver chalice.
It's like a silver chalice, but it makes espresso. And I've been wanting one because I've been wanting more like fancy coffee. And all we have is like a Keurig, which is fantastic. I love Keurigs. At least I do now. They used to be really bad.
You didn't used to like them?
Old Keurigs like 10 years ago were not good. They're really bad quality and the coffee wasn't good, but it's improved over the years.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought they were like a recent thing. I guess they had the really big Keurigs like back like a couple years ago, not a couple years ago, but back when
you don't even drink coffee. You are not qualified to talk on this subject.
I don't drink coffee.
But yeah, so I'm having an Americano right now and it's fantabulous. I'm very enjoying it. I'm not going to sleep tonight.
An American drinking Americano.
As a woman who has anxieties, I'm going to be awake all night.
Yes.
Okay. Also, spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't listened to the podcast before. We talk about all the things that happen in the movies.
We will talk about the women who are talking.
We are going to talk about these women, okay? Someone's got to say it. Actually, I don't have anything to say. That's why we have a podcast about it. So, yes, we are going to spoil the whole movie. And also remember to follow us on Letterboxd, DI_podcast, where we post the movies before we talk about them in case anybody has any comments. Did anybody leave any comments? I think my sister said something.
Yes, your sister did say something.
Okay, Jonathan's going to pull up Letterboxd and see if there were any comments.
Give me a second. Processing. What's annoying about Letterboxd is that it takes a long time. When you type like the first word, you still have to scroll a lot to
what
find it.
What are you
it.
Looking for right now? Oh,
there it
I
is.
See.
Yes, Carly Bernard said, or excuse me.
She's
soon,
gonna,
soon
she's
to be Carly Bernard.
Soon to be Carly Bernard in less than a month, which is crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Okay.
So excited for this episode. I always listen to your podcast first to decide if I even want to see the movie.
Yeah.
Love that. Thanks for the support.
I appreciate that. I don't think our opinions are very valid or useful at all in the cinema world, but at least Carly respects it, which is nice. Yes. Thanks, Carly. Mrs. Bernard. Okay, so let's just dive right in. Jonathan, do you want to intro the movie?
Yes, the movie is Women Talking, directed by Sarah Polley. This is the first movie I have seen of hers. I've never even heard of her, actually, until this movie. She also directed Take This Waltz and Away From Her, a couple other documentaries, and she's also acted in about 50 movies.
Whoa, what has she acted in?
Most notably, a movie called Mr. Nobody with Jared Leto, the Mr. remake Nobody. Of Dawn of the Dead, John Adams series on HBO.
Never heard of any of these things that you're talking about.
Exotica. A bunch of random movies. But she's...
Well, now she's an Oscar-nominated director, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. And let me read the synopsis. A group of women in an isolated religious colony struggle to reconcile their faith with a string of sexual assaults committed by the colony's men. That is per Letterboxd. The stars. Rooney Mara as Ona. Jesse Buckley as Marik. Is that how you pronounced it?
What?
Marik.
Which one?
Jesse Buckley.
Wait, let me see. Did you write her name down?
Yeah, right there.
Oh, it was Marike.
Marike? Okay. Marike. I couldn't remember. Frances McDormand, her name, I don't think it's ever said in the movie, but it's Scarface Johns. Jans.
Her name, she goes by Scarface?
Scarface Johns.
They never said what her scar was from, but I feel like people could make the assumption it was from an attack.
Mm-hmm. Claire Foy as Salome. Ben Winshaw as August. Sheila McCarthy as Greta, Judith Ivy as Agata, and Kate Hallett as Atja.
To be honest, I wasn't that excited about this movie until I heard that Claire, what's her last name?
Foy.
Claire Foy was in it because she was the original actress to play the queen in The Crown.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that show. And she was amazing in that show. And once I saw that she was in this, I was like, oh my God, I'm actually really excited to see it.
When did you find out she was in this?
The day we were going to watch it, and we were looking at the picture of it on Amazon. I was like, oh my gosh, Claire, it's so good to see you.
You said that.
Yeah, I was so excited once I saw that she was in it, which, you know, I was excited to see it otherwise, but.
Yes.
I'm not going to lie. If you tell me it's a movie just about people talking the whole time, it doesn't sound super exciting to me.
It's what a lot of movies are, though. I mean,
yeah,
12 Angry Men. That's what that movie is.
I guess, yeah, but they don't straight out say, this is just a bunch of people talking the whole time. You know, it's like, oh, there's 12 Angry Men.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
This is just 12 Angry Women, pretty much.
Yeah, it was a lot more than 12. And they had 12. A pretty good reason to be angry.
That's true. Yeah. But yeah, that's all I've got.
Yeah.
For the intro. And yeah, Atja was the narrator, and you don't know that she's the character narrating at first. And the narration kind of threw me off at first.
Yeah, so we can get into that in a sec. You want to give our reviews first?
Oh, yeah, sure. I don't know.
I give it a 3.5 out of 5.
I'm leaning 3.5. There are some aspects that I thought were just, like, brilliant. And mm-hmm. others that I thought were lacking.
I agree.
Which isn't really a profound thing to say, but it's just how I feel.
Your feelings are valid.
Thank you. Glad you think so.
Yeah, I think it was a really good story and a really good idea. And I think it was well executed and the acting was great. But I don't think it was like blow me away cinema-wise to be Best Picture winner. Mm. Like, I think it was a worthy story and it was good. It was something that should be told, you know, and it definitely looked at perspectives that you don't normally see, and thought processes that you don't normally see, you know what I mean? And I think that was well done, mm-hmm. but I don't think realistic. That just because the story is really important, I don't think that means that it is a good enough film to be considered for Best Picture. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. There are many stories like that that have been nominated for Best Picture that, sure, the story is notable, but might not be Best Picture worthy.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so let's talk about the narration like you brought up with Atya. So I guess the whole movie, it kind of starts out more with narration at the beginning and then it kind of slows down at the end. Now, I'm not a huge fan of narration. I feel like it's used the majority of the time to just hand you things like that's easy, that they want you to know about the story, but they don't want to put in the effort of really like showing you it through the acting. They just kind of want to tell you it. Whereas in this case, I think they used it very well to kind of set up like the mindset of the women and what their lives were really like. And in reality, it was more telling you the feelings and like what life was like for the women rather than just like giving you storyline information. Yeah. And so Atya is the one who's telling the story. Which character was that? Which person was Atya?
Atya was the young girl. There were two young girls that were in the main group.
Was it the one who was the daughter of Marike or the other one?
Daughter of Marike.
The daughter of Marike. Okay, yeah. I liked Atya. She was a little badass. But so she's basically telling the story of like, this is the past. Like she was telling it almost like she was telling it to her grandchild, was it? Or her child or something? Or somebody else's like grandchild. That. Like she was telling it as if she was an elder now, telling it to a child who is learning about the history of their family. So she was telling the story as if it was in the past tense. Like, I'm sharing this with you. And then we get to watch the story that she is telling to somebody's descendant. I don't remember who it was, but somebody's kid.
Yeah.
Which I thought was an interesting take on it. Like, a way to kind of introduce, like, this has already happened. We are telling you the story of what happened, which makes you kind of view it a little differently, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, it was Ona's kid that she was.
It was Ona's kids? Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah.
That
so,
makes sense.
Yeah. All of these women are basically part of a colony in you don't know where. Somewhere in America.
Unknown.
Somewhere in America is what you know.
But it's in like 2010. So.
Yeah, I know. That
really threw me off at
there's
first.
A part where you don't know what time it is and or you don't know what date it is and you don't know where they are. But then you learn that they're in America through something we'll talk about later. And you learn that it's 2010. And you're like, oh, my gosh, like 2010. Like, it's crazy how this lifestyle is still being lived and people are still being treated this way in America.
Yeah.
You know, and it just it just gets looked over, you know, because it's not a part of like the modern civilization. People just let happen what happens in their area just because they live a different way.
Yeah, I think this presented that community in a very realistic way. I thought it was pretty notable for that.
Yeah, it was interesting. And how we'll get to that part when we get there. Let's just walk through the movie, okay? So this movie starts out with like a bunch of women.
No way.
Surprise, surprise. And there's like, so the first shot, let's just say the first shot, it shows Anna, who is kind of like probably in her early 20s.
Ona.
I kept calling her Anna.
Oh, that's okay.
Ona.
I was like, is there a woman named Anna?
She's probably in her early 20s and they show a shot of her in her bed and she has like blood on her legs and she's kind of like just distraught. And I don't know why, but my first instinct was like, oh, is this like her first period or something?
That's what I thought
too. She looked very young. And I think you're not supposed to know. Like, you're supposed to, you know, like not really understand what had happened. And she doesn't even really understand what happened, but she knows it's not her first period because she had actually been attacked by somebody. So,
drugged.
Yeah. Oh, they were drugging them. That's why they were unconscious. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's terrible. Okay. I didn't know that they were getting drugged. And then it cuts to like a group of people laying over a bunch of pews praying. And that's kind of when you get introduced to the fact of like, okay, this is a very old traditional civilization or colony. And they're very religious, literally like laying over the pews, praying, all of them like in unison, kind of sets that up for you. And then the narrator kind of starts talking about what's going on and she introduces to you like these women are being attacked all the time in the night. And like you said, they're getting drugged. And that the elders have been telling the women that they are either lying for attention or a ghost or Satan has raped them, basically.
Yeah.
Like, they're basically taking any blame off of, like, the men who would have done it, and they're saying, oh, it's your fault. Like, oh, Satan is coming for you, or ghost is coming for you. Like, just wiping it away, like, cleaning the men's slate, because that's easy for them. And it's, like, awful, because these women are then blaming themselves for something terrible that happened to them they had no control over. It's literally awful. And so they let you know that they actually ended up catching one of the men who attacked a woman. And that man, when they caught him, gave up a bunch of names of other men who had been attackers. So it's kind of like a large group of the community's men have been attacking women and getting away with it, obviously, because the elders are making excuses for them.
Yeah, and they've been doing it for, like, a long time. Seems to be
It's been going on for a very long time. And they then show you Salome, who is one of the women, and she is attacking a group of men with, like, a curved knife. What is that called?
A sickle,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And she's, like, crazed.
Yeah, she's
violent. And you're like, these attacks, like, they don't really ever tell you what happens in the attacks, but you kind of make assumptions. And it's kind of showing you, like, how terrible it is that this woman would literally come out with a knife and attack these people when she finds out who they are because of all the terrible things they've done to her and her family.
Yeah, I think it was good that they did not explicitly show the attacks.
I think only it was aftermath. Genius. Okay, I wanted to make a comment about that, actually.
Yeah, for sure.
I think something super important that they did in this movie is they never showed the men.
Never showed the men, except for
They never showed the attacks. They only showed the woman, like, the women and their grief and their coping and their actions and their choices. And it really, like, focuses on what's really important about it. And it doesn't give any light or any attention to these bad people who have been doing terrible things. I thought it was amazing that they made the choice to not show them at all.
Mm-hmm. And to not.
And it also made them kind of, like, nameless and faceless. Like, it was almost like this could be anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thought, and to not give them a face and take away that ability to even empathize with the men at all on any, like, position.
Yeah, you don't see them at all. You can't even empathize with them. Mm-hmm. You don't know what they're like as people other than that they have literally attacked women. In reality, that's all that matters.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter if maybe he's a nice guy if you meet him in passing. Like, he's attacked people and harmed people intentionally, and that's all that really matters about his character.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, at least. Yeah. So I thought that was, I thought that was very smart and very, I really liked that they did that. So they let you know that the attackers who had been given up were taken to the police, and they said for their own protection. And I was like, excuse me?
Women?
Like, are you kidding me? Like, they deserve to be attacked by the women. And then all of the men in the city, literally all of the men left to go bail these guys out of jail.
Yeah, literally.
But I'm like, it doesn't make sense to me that, like, they put them in jail for their own protection, but then they're going to bail them out. Like, why did they put them in jail at all? Like, I wonder if the men just told the women, we put them in jail for...
No, that's exactly what happened. Yeah, the men just told the women...
that it was for their own protection.
For their own protection.
But in reality, it was because they deserved to be put in jail.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they thought the women would be stupid enough to not understand it, and they could just tell them random crap like that. And somehow they think that the women can't think for themselves understand that, like, that doesn't make any sense.
Goes to show how much they manipulated them. And then, yeah, you heard one of the women say, like a whole speech about, like, I want to think for myself, like, for once. I want that freedom.
Yeah. The women only wanted a couple things, and one of them was just to think for themselves. Yeah. Be allowed to think. Like, I can't even imagine, like, how awful that is, like, having to live in a life where you can't even think your own thoughts, you know?
Yeah,
that's not even allowed. And they get into that, they make a comment about it, which I thought was really good, and we'll get to that. Can you click that thing on the computer?
Yeah, I'll click that thing.
Thanks.
Sure.
Yeah, so then you are also told that the women are told they have to forgive the men who attacked them, or they would be denied entry to heaven. And I'm like, who comes up with this crap? Like, who made that decision? Like, did God tell them these women better forgive these men, or these women are going to hell? Like, the men just made that crap up to control them. It just pisses me off. And so then they show all of these women filing into a barn, and they're all wearing like traditional dresses, and you are told that none of them have been educated and they can't read, but this is the one day where they're learning how to vote. Mm-hmm. So what you find out is that the women are learning to vote on if the women are going to stay, fight, or leave. And I think it's interesting how the women are almost treated as like a hive mind. Do you know? Like, they are all in this together. They are all either leaving or they all either staying. And I liked how they were, it was like a whole collective group thing. Like, it was a collective. Like, they understood that, like, as a whole, they had power, but individually they did not.
Yeah.
And so what they had done, since the woman couldn't read, is that somebody had drawn a picture of a horse, like looking back, and that meant to leave. And they'd drawn a picture of a woman and a man holding a knife at each other, and that meant to fight. And they had drawn a picture of just like a meadow, and that meant to stay. Mm-hmm. And so the women would go up behind like a wall so that they could privately make their decision without feeling pressure.
Yeah.
And they would put an X where they were voting for. So like whichever decision they wanted to make for the women. And only a couple, probably like 20 people X stay. And the majority were X's on to fight or to leave. And so what ended up happening is there was a tie between staying and fighting. So the two big families, I guess, the women of some of the biggest families in the, or, I guess, most important families in the colony.
Or fighting and leaving.
Yeah, they were going to debate and decide on if they were going to fight or leave. Mm-hmm. And like all within one day. So that's where the whole women talking thing is the whole movie encompasses them trying to decide if the colony as a whole should leave or should stay.
And yeah, it takes place over a 24-hour period, I believe.
Yeah, it definitely, I think it did.
Fun fact, well, yeah, I told this now. So this is based on a 2018 novel of the same name by Miriam Toews, and inspired by real-life events that occurred at the Manitoba Colony, a remote and isolated Mennonite community in Bolivia.
Interesting. So it's based on a real story.
Mm-hmm.
That's sad.
Yeah.
That it really happened to people. Mm-hmm. But stuff like that still happens today, and it's a good reminder that it happens. Because it's even easy to overlook it and ignore it when it's not directly in front of you. And it's a good reminder that crap like that still happens and we shouldn't be pretending like it doesn't and ignoring it.
Yeah, we should watch She Said too, the movie about the...
Oh, I really want to see that. Yeah. You're also just excited because it's Carey Mulligan and you love Carey Mulligan.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
She's a great actress. But I am very excited about that. We should talk about it when it comes out.
Yeah, well, it already came out in theaters, but
they didn't have it a year.
Yeah,
do you think it'll come here?
I doubt it.
Sometimes they do come just later.
They might.
Oh, well,
rent it if not.
We should watch that one for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So before the women start, they all decide that they need to wash each other's feet, like the disciples did, in the Bible, I guess. They're all equals. They're all serving each other, I guess. Is that the reminder, I guess, of them washing each other's feet?
I didn't even think about that.
Actually. Yeah. So that's what they do before they begin. And it also introduces to you, like, these women are very devout in their faith, in the symbolism of their faith and what it means to them, and how it's going to have a big impact on their decision-making throughout the process. And, I mean, it's got to be hard for these women, not only going through such a traumatizing experience as a community, but also... the idea of, like, they've been told by their faith, apparently, they've really been told by the men, that they have to, you know, think a certain way and act a certain way, or they're not going to heaven. So imagine having to make these decisions also with the consideration of, like, in the eyes of the men, at least in what they've been told, like, that they're going against their faith and they're going against God. But I think a lot of them realize, like, that God wouldn't treat them that way, you know, and God wouldn't think that way.
God wouldn't punish me if I protected my child from being attacked.
Yeah, someone said that, and it was very true.
And they all had, like, very, like, differing personalities, which I thought was very interesting. And I thought they contrast each other very well with... They were all very devout, but several for different, like, reasons, I guess.
Yeah.
I liked that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. So then they kind of start doing the debate. And one of the topics that they talk about is if they will enter the kingdom of heaven when they die, or like if they won't, if they leave. And one girl, Anna, says, Ona says that there's got to be more to live for in this life and not only the next. As if, like, is life supposed to be that terrible in this form before mm-hmm. you go to heaven? Like, is this really, there's got to be something more worth living for, you know, before you move on. What were you going to say?
She was, like, the deepest thinker out yes. of all of them.
Ona was very introspective. She mm-hmm. thought very deeply, and she was very loving and considering of everybody's situation, no matter who they were or what they were. She showed compassion even in some of the comments that she made about the attackers,
yeah.
which we'll talk about later. But she was definitely a very even keel thinker, and she cared a lot for everybody. So I think partially all of these characters, they represented the different ways that people cope with grief, because they were kind of all acting in different ways. Like Ona was trying to see things from everyone's perspective, whereas Marike, is that how you say her name? Marike was acting in rage as her coping mechanism, and anger. And one woman, she smoked mm-hmm. to try and get past it, and she suffered from anxiety attacks. And there was just like a bunch of different things that people did. Like one woman used her horses as a metaphor to cope yeah. with it, and to try to come up with decisions and compare things to her horses in her everyday life to cope with it. So it was interesting that they showed how everybody, even though they're going through the same experience, copes differently.
That's a good thought. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't think about
it. I really liked that.
And then every time she was like, let me tell you about a time about Ruth and Cheryl, and all yeah. the women would just like yeah. roll their eyes.
So that woman was Greta, and she was the mother of Marike. She was the mother of Marike. So Greta, at this point in the story, actually says, can I bring up talk about my two horses, Greta and Ruth? And this is the first time she does it, so people are like they don't laugh at it. Because yeah. later she does it so many times, they start to almost laugh at her. And she was talking about how both of them one day, because she has her two horses that pull her buggy, both of them are scared of this one dog. And if they see the dog, they'll both run in unison. And she was like saying, maybe that's what we need to do. Maybe we need to respond like animals. And they moved together without even thinking twice. Like they were like, we're getting out of here. And they both didn't have to talk about it. Didn't have to make a decision. They were like, we're getting out.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a big debate on the difference between leaving and fleeing, mm-hmm. which I thought was a good distinction to make. They're not fleeing. They're choosing to not be there anymore and leave.
Yeah, they really went in depth into what particular words mean in the context of what they're dealing with,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Yeah, which was it's just important to understand. Like if you're communicating with people and you have a different meaning to the words that you're using, there's no way you could ever have like clear communication yeah. and understanding. And they were making such a big decision for so many people. That they needed to be on the same page.
Drastic for them.
For yeah. Sure. I mean, it was a life-changing decision for the entire colony of mm-hmm. women. So then they touch on the fact that in their colony, they never talk about their bodies, and that the silence of that is a real horror for them. The fact that like it has to be secretive. You can't talk about it. You can't be open about it, even though everybody was going through the same thing. And I think that was one way that the men, you know, use their power to like silence the women of making them think they can't talk about those kinds of things. And then they don't have the freedom to like talk with other people and cope with it and understand that it's not okay, you know, for that to happen to them.
It's sad.
It's really sad. It's a very sad movie. They definitely touch on some important topics. So then the women decide they're going to do a list of pros and cons. And also, I don't know if I've talked about this yet, but there was a man there with them. His name was August. And he is very important throughout the story.
He's a school teacher.
He is a school teacher. He had been exiled from the colony for some drama things because his mother had been questioning the decisions of the colony. And so they exiled his family, and he went to college, and then he came back to educate the boys in mm-hmm. the colony. And you could tell he really cared about the people in the colony. I mean, he chose to come back. So, sorry, I'm yawning.
You're good.
I always yawn from talking so much. But so he comes back and he's just like a sweetheart. Like, he's really nice. He really empathizes MVP. With the women a lot. He has a lot of compassion. He's there to take the minutes for them to keep track of everything that they talk about and that they decide. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can tell he's really like the male figure that they all trust. Like, the only man that it seems like any of them trust is August.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What a guy.
And they get into talking a little bit more about his character, and I wrote it down and we'll talk about it later because there was something that they said about him that I really liked.
Fun fact, it doesn't really relate at all, but throughout filming, the cast were advised not to put on makeup or shave until it was over.
I love that because I hate it in movies when they're like, oh, you need to put on makeup to look like you're not wearing makeup. Like, I don't get it. Like, when women wake up in the morning with a full face of makeup and excuse me.
Yeah.
That's not how we look when we wake up. Like, this is not true. I appreciated that they didn't put makeup on any of them.
Me too.
I mean, you never really saw their, like, armpits or anything or their legs. But I guess it's just the principle of, like, not shaving, you mm-hmm. know?
And just for realism, too.
Yeah, for like realism.
Although many Mennonite communities are less restrictive than the one depicted in this movie, the actual colony that it's based on is ultra-conservative. Unlike other Mennonite groups, they don't allow electricity, telephones, or automobiles.
Isn't that just Amish? Because I thought Mennonites... No, I don't know too much about this, but I thought Mennonites were less strict than Amish people.
I thought they were
like Mennonites used washers and electricity and stuff. I thought Mennonites were less extreme.
Well, this is less an ultra conservative. I guess it could be.
I lived
Amish.
In Pennsylvania for one summer. I'm an Amish expert.
You know this.
No, I'm kidding. But I did go to Lancaster County.
That's where they are.
Yeah, I did meet some Amish people. They're very nice.
Like the women in the movie, the women in the real life Manitoba colony are not allowed to learn to read.
That's terrible. I don't understand. It's just a form of control. There's no reason a woman shouldn't be able to read.
I know. I don't really understand it either. I guess.
It's completely a form of control. I mean, imagine it. If a woman can't read and you tell her she needs to live her life by God, through the word of God, and the word of God is the Bible, but she can't read the Bible.
She can't read the Bible.
She can't fact check it. She can't be like, that's not in the Bible.
She can only
take what she's been told. Yeah, is in the Bible, which is just awful. I mean, it's like the most basic form of like manipulation, like not allowing somebody to even read the text that you are telling them to live by. It's crazy. It's awful.
To even understand what you're saying in the first place.
Yeah. So they start to make a list of pros and cons of leaving versus staying. And for staying and fighting, one of the pros is that they don't want to leave their home. Like, it's all the only home they've ever known. And one of the cons is that they won't be forgiven for leaving. And then Ona. I'm sorry. says that they need to talk about what staying and fighting would mean. Like, what would they actually achieve? Like, what would the colony look like after they win their fight? And she says that what she would be fighting for is for men and women to work together to make decisions, for women to learn to read and write, a map of the world to be taught so everybody could understand where they are and who they are what they are respective to the world. They had no idea where they were.
No idea.
They didn't even know what the world looked like.
Except for, yeah, we'll talk about that later.
And then a new religion would be formed that focused on love and that the children would always be safe. And she compares how the fact that animals are safer at night in their pens than women are in their homes, which is awful.
Which is sad.
Yeah. So then they talk about how do they even know what man is guilty. Now, I will say, I'm sorry, but this entire podcast is us just talking about what they talked about. So just keep that in mind. We're going through the plot. Next, they talked about this.
A man and a woman talking.
Men and women talking. Yeah. So then they talk about how they don't even really know who the guilty men are because the only evidence they have is one man's word.
One man's
word.
When
he got caught and he let everybody, he gave the names of all of them. They don't even know if they are all the guilty men, you know? They don't even know who to point the finger at. So in reality, it's like the women are fighting against all men in the colony.
Exactly.
And they don't even know what children are impacted by it. Like, they talk about it a couple times. Like, what age do they make the distinction between an innocent child and a man who could harm you?
Yeah, it was
really a horrible sad. Thing because they're ask. Sitting there talking about their own children. Like, they're like, I can't even imagine thinking like demonizing your own child, you know, that kid could grow up to be an attacker and do the same thing to other women, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I keep yawning. Yeah. So, and then Anna goes into something that I thought was interesting. And this is her kind of showing that side of like, she's understanding of all perspectives. And she says that the attackers are victims of their circumstances and the circumstances that the colony was created. And that the men have been taught that they are powerful and think that they are powerful because that's what they've been told. And they've been raised to think that doing things like this is okay and acting this way is okay. So in reality, they're almost saying like, or she is almost saying like, these men are victims of the circumstances of the colony.
Yeah.
And
power resides where you think it does.
It's exactly right. Like, where you think power is. That's true, honestly, though, in any sense of the word.
Mm-hmm. And when other people always have power, you're always going to think that they always will.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, think about how young our country is. Like, America, it's only 200 years old.
Pretty young for a country.
Think of all the empires and dynasties in the past that have been like thousands of years. They never thought that their empire would fall.
Yeah.
They never thought their dynasty would fall. I mean, like,
Genghis Khan.
What are we sitting here thinking America is going to be around forever? We don't know what the future is. Like, we're a very young country in the grand scheme of things compared to the other civilizations that have existed.
Which is crazy. Yeah. Mesopotamia. The Ottoman Empire? I could go on.
Yeah.
I got all this.
The American Empire? LOL. No. Yeah. It's just weird to think that, like, I don't know why it made me consider, like, is our country even, like, that sturdy, you know?
Yeah.
How long is it really going to be around?
I don't know.
I don't know. It's a
good question.
Hopefully for at least the rest of our lifetimes and our children's lifetimes.
Hopefully. And their children's children and so on and so forth.
So on and so forth, of course. And yes.
It's usually what I say.
So on and so forth.
It means a lot of things. Because
then you don't have to say anything.
You can apply it to so many things.
So you say it because you don't know what other things to say.
That's usually
what are
what
the
I
other
say
things? As one does. Yeah. So did you have anything you wanted to say?
No.
So on and so forth.
Etc.
Yeah, etc. So, okay, then Anna also brings up something and she's like, well, what if we ask the men to leave? And someone mentions that they have never had to ask a man to do anything before. I think this was, I wrote her name down.
Marie-Gay?
It was one of the moms.
I keep on saying Mariachi.
Mariachi. Agata? I think her name was Agata.
Her name was Agata. That is correct.
Yeah, Agata. Her name was Agata.
It's here to fact check you. That's pretty much it.
And so Agata is like, wait, I totally lost my place. Yeah. So she's like, I have never asked a man to do anything before in my life. And the first thing that I would ever ask of them is to leave. And they all started laughing. Mm-hmm. And they say it's like not an option. There's no way we could ask them to leave. Which was kind of sad that she was like, the only thing I've ever even requested of a man like would be to ask him to leave.
Is that, yeah, exactly.
It's awful because it shows you in their society, like, they aren't allowed to ask anything of their husbands or the men. Like, that
anything.
They really have given, like, they haven't given them. They've been forced to give them, like, so much power, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anna then asks August if it never mattered what he thought, how would he feel? And she says it with everyone knowing that that is what the women's life is. Like, she's kind of telling him what it's like to be a woman in that colony. It's like, your entire life, what you think doesn't matter,
mm-hmm.
you know? And he doesn't say anything because he's like, I know this is not my place to make a comment.
That
which
is the time
he was
to
very
say,
good about knowing.
Silent, my guy.
Yeah. He made the right decision. So then Salome mentions that she has to leave soon to give her daughter antibiotics. And this kind of shows you like the lengths that these women go to protect their children. You end up finding out that she had walked a day and a half with her child on her back so that she could get her antibiotics because she was sick.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Just to get to a mobile clinic. Like, the things that she went through, she didn't tell her husband because she probably knew her husband would say no. Mm-hmm. And she trekked like that to, for her child. It was so sad that, that's what she had to do to get, you know, medical help for her kid. So then at this point, they adjourn the meeting for a break. And then they cut to a woman who has just given birth to an unhealthy baby. And you assume that the baby did not survive. And she's like walking outside to a shed and she's talking to someone in the shed who you think is her brother, because that's what she says. And she thinks that her brother is the one who raped her and got her pregnant. And she thinks that because the baby was unhealthy and it didn't survive. And so she is very traumatized, obviously, because that's an extremely traumatizing experience. And you find out that the girl's name is actually Nettie. And Nettie was never happy as a woman. She always associated better as a man. And so they actually show you that now, present day, she is transgender and she goes by the name Melvin. And it's interesting that she didn't get excommunicated from the colony for that.
I know.
Because you would think that would be something that such a traditional society would, you know, excommunicate somebody for.
I know, I agree.
So I wasn't sure. They never really talked about that, why she wasn't excommunicated, but she wasn't, which was good. Mm-hmm. She should not have been excommunicated.
No.
So then August starts to talk about life outside of the colony with Acha at the water pump during their break.
Right.
And this is when they tell you how he was banished and how he went to college. And you can tell that all of the women really trust him. And he seems to be the only man that the women do trust. And the girl, so he is like, I went to university so that I could teach the boys. And then Acha goes, it's too late for that because the boys are bad boys.
Yeah, that was a good line.
It was a very good line. I was like, yes, bitch, that is literally, you are iconic. You are correct. That is exactly what has happened. And you can tell he's ashamed. Like, he, all he wants to do is help. And he knows that, like, is a crappy situation and he hasn't been able to really alleviate anything for them. Yeah. And he says he wants to help and he doesn't know how. And everybody knows that he came back for Anna because he's in love with Anna.
Oh, no.
Well, some of the people pronounce her name Anna.
Anna.
Anna. That's what we're going to call her now. Anna. Yeah. So then they cut back to a truck driving through the town blasting music on the speakers. And this is when they date the movie. This is when you find out when the movie occurs. And they're playing a song. I don't remember what the song was.
The song of the choice of the song, Daydream Believer, has a thematic meaning. It references a sleepy woman. Sleepy Jean is a verse.
Cheer up, sleepy Jean.
Emerging from a revere. That's just another word for like a dream or a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
This movie's subject is women who have been attacked in their drug sleep and are emerging from a nightmare. So
that's what that song is about? I did not know that. That's terrible.
Well, the song references a sleepy woman emerging from a nightmare.
Awful. Yeah, because the song sounds so cheery going through the town.
I know, it does.
Yeah. And so there's a truck going through the town and it's like playing the song. And it's like, everybody come out of your houses so that we can count you for the U.S. Or not U.S., but for the 2010 census. Yeah. And you know it's the U.S. And you're like, oh my God, this is in 2010. Like, it was crazy. And it was a really smart way for them to date the film without having to tell you, because the women don't know. The women don't care. Yeah. It doesn't mean anything to them.
Yeah, exactly.
So like, that's the only way that you can find out. And then you know that they're close to a normal modern, not normal, but they're close to a modern civilization or town, because this truck is driving through there and the truck and everybody knows that those people live there. But they have no idea what anybody outside of the colony is like.
That's just crazy to me, like living that way. It's very like simple lifestyle. It's crazy to me.
I guess if that's the way that you're raised, life is, it's not crazy at all.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, so then the women adjourn. The adjournment has ended. They are, what's the opposite of adjourn? Rejourned?
Rejoin.
Rejoice.
What's
the
summon?
Opposite of adjourn? I don't know. I don't know those lawyer
Collect.
Words. No, stop trying.
Laissez-faire.
Just stop.
Et cetera. That's Latin.
Et cetera. yeah, so then Atya, I was a little annoyed at this part. She runs through the barn and she's like, I can't live any longer. And she jumps out.
I know.
And you think she killed herself. Yeah. And in reality, she just jumped into a bucket of hay and everybody laughs. I'm like, this is not funny.
Yeah, it was like, it's very not morbid
funny
humor.
To fake that you're dying, you know?
Yeah.
And there had already been a woman in the colony who had killed herself. And it was like, this is not a good joke. I don't like this, Atya.
But the camera angle.
But maybe
on
that's
that.
The way Atya copes with joking, you know?
True.
Making jokes true. Out of it. So maybe that's what that was representing, was her form of coping. But still, probably. I didn't think it was a funny joke.
Per Emmy Klaser.
Etc. then they let them know, the girl lets them know that she was talking to the guy in the car, the census guy, and he told her that Klaus is coming back to get more money to bail the men out of jail. Now, Klaus is Marike's husband.
Yes.
Mariachi's and husband. Mariachi's husband. And he is one of the worst attackers from what you get from it. He's a pretty bad guy. And she, of course, is very mean and she snaps at people and she's rageful. And you know that's just her way of coping at this point. And she snaps at August for asking a simple question and she yells at him and says, you're just here to take your minutes. That's all you were invited here to do. And he apologizes. And I think you can tell that she is snapping at this point because she knows her husband's coming back and she's scared.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the way that she's lashing out. Or not lashing out, but that's the way she's dealing with it. So that was pretty sad and scary that, like, your husband coming home is something fearful for you, which nobody should have to think that.
And they just live with that just every day. Some of them live with that just every day.
Yeah, that's a lot of people's everyday life.
Yeah, true. Very true.
And so then they start talking about... Marike starts talking about how they're going to have to leave their sons and husbands behind. And Ona's like, we don't have to leave all men. Not all men are bad.
Yeah, then they start getting into what age does the crossover happen between.
No, that was at a different point.
That was at a different point?
Yeah, that was later.
Oh, what do I
yeah.
know?
Yeah, yeah. Stop talking, Jonathan.
As so forth.
Thank you for your contribution.
Anytime.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, then they start to show shots of like young boys who are just at the age where they're transitioning from being innocent kids to going through puberty and when they start to really define themselves as men. And they kind of touch on when that happens, but they don't actually state an age on it. The age comes later.
Yeah, oh, okay.
I think. I don't know. I'm crazy. But then Ona starts throwing up because she preggers. And being pregnant is hard, I can imagine. I don't know. I've never been pregnant, so I can't speak too much to it. And August is there, patting her on the back and getting her water. And she tells him that it's good that he is there to remind them of how men can be. Which is nice. Like, he kind of is that figure of hope for men and the fact that they're not hopefully all evil. Like, mm-hmm. there are people like him out there who are kind. And he apologizes to her and she says, I hope one day I hear that from somebody who actually deserves to say it or something. I can't remember exactly what she said.
It was that way.
But it was sweet. She was like so, you know, thoughtful and thinking that it was almost annoying. Like, come on, Ona. Not everything you say has to have that much meaning. Well, she's definitely grown up, but I was just like, oh, how do you think so deeply all the time? It seems exhausting.
It would be exhausting.
Yeah.
Can I say something about this movie?
No.
Continue.
Carry on. You can say it.
The socks with the sandals were killing me. Oh, my God.
Socks with sandals? I noticed it, but I didn't care.
It bothered me the whole time.
Why? You don't want to... You know, my sister, she wears socks with sandals.
That explains a lot.
Because she doesn't... I think it... That's so mean. I think it's because she doesn't like getting, like, pebbles in her sandals or something. So if you wear socks, that doesn't happen.
Like,
I don't know.
The pebble would go
It's probably a great tactic to, like, you know, have a secure shoe. Toes are protected, but, you know, there's
but
that
the
good
sock,
ventilation.
The sock gets dirty, though.
I don't know.
Okay. And then nothing, also another thing, you know, in the...
So you didn't like their fashion sense is what you're telling me.
Yeah, not at all.
Because they totally had a choice in that.
True.
What else did you want to complain about?
the color grading, like, you know, the medicine commercials for like depression, like, take this if you're suffering from depression.
Yeah.
And it shows, like, in the beginning they're talking about the depression and then it introduces the medicine and it becomes like colorful and light.
Yeah.
But before that, it's like black and white and depressed.
Yeah.
That's what the whole movie looked like.
Well, they were depressed.
I know, but it was very bland cinematography, and that was on purpose, but it still, I just didn't.
Yeah, the cinematography was super bland, but you're right, it was on purpose. Like, it was very straightforward and like represented the simplicity of a lifestyle like that.
Yes, it wasn't black and white, but it was close.
Thank you for saying that.
That's my contribution.
It wasn't black and white, but it was almost kind of like a sepia vibe.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So on and so forth.
So back to the story. August proposes to Ona, and she's
proposes
like
to propose.
She's proposing that he should propose. And Ona says that she would not be herself if she is married. And I'm like, come on, girl. Just tell the truth. You don't like him. Like, you don't have to, like, tease him. It kind of bothered me. She was kind of just like, he was in love with her. And she just kind of pulled him along. She just, like,
she
stringed him along.
Actually.
And it kind of bothered me.
And even at
maybe
the very
there
end.
Was some symbolism I didn't pick it out. But the whole time, she just stringed him along. You know, she's like, come sit with me. I guess I'm going to ask you a question.
Let me drink some water out of your hands.
Yeah, she just kind of stringed him along instead of being like, I don't like you. She was like, I wouldn't be myself if I'm married. And I'm like, I don't think that's true. If you're married to the right person,
yeah, exactly.
You can be yourself.
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
That's the dream.
Yeah. So then they get back to the meeting and they start discussing things again.
This is a lot of talking.
I mean, it's in the name. It is to be expected. So then they fight over if men should be able to come with them. And Marike says that the men should be able to come if they want. And some fight saying that all men would come with because they can't survive a day without the women. And they would end up just creating the same colony somewhere else. And then another person says
Which
that they should only bring
point.
The men with them that they know are good. And I thought it was interesting that Marike is one of the people who was advocating the whole time to not leave, even though she is the only woman that they specifically state has a husband who is a known attacker. And I think that's because she was so abused mentally and physically to the point where, like, she was so loyal to her husband out of fear, you know,
mm-hmm.
that she was like, she felt safe and secure in being complicit to it because of everything that she had been through, you know, and that was her way of coping.
Yeah, that's a good thought.
It was really, yeah, because she was like one of the women who advocated the most to stay.
And then Salome was doing it because of her children.
Yeah. Salome wanted to stay for her kids, and it was because it was their home and she wanted to fight for their home.
Mm-hmm. Good note. Fun fact. The first time Rooney Mara and Claire Foy have starred together in the same film, they both played the same character, Elizabeth Salander, in The Girl in the Dragon Tattoo and The Girl in the Dragon's Web.
Oh, that's cool. So they played the same character before.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then Mayhal begins to have an anxiety attack. And they call it one of her episodes and they pray over her because they don't know what an anxiety attack is. And Mayhal has been caught smoking before as well. And you know now that it's probably because it helps her cope with her grief. And Mariachi gets mad at her saying that she's asking for attention by having anxiety attacks. And I'm so annoyed. This is when I was like really annoyed at Marike.
Yeah.
But the women were so sweet to Marike because they all just knew that she was coping that way. But she snaps at Mayhal and she's kind of rude to her and everybody just goes with it. They're just like, okay, cool. Thanks for saying that. And then they move on. And then it was interesting. The women start saying that they can be forgiven. They would be sad to leave because they couldn't be forgiven for leaving. And then Greta, one of the older women, Marike's mom, goes, well, we can be forgiven by other men of God outside of the colony for the sins of leaving. And then Salome lashes out and she's like, they don't need to be forgiven for their sins at all. She only needs God to forgive her and that she will not apologize for protecting her family. Which I thought was really, that was a very feminist and an amazing thing for her to say. Like, we don't need a man to forgive us. The only person who will judge us is God.
I think that was the best scene in the whole movie was her outburst.
Her acting was so good in the outburst. Yeah. It was amazing. And then she says at the end, she's like, I'll become a murderer if I stay. Like, she's like, there's no way I can let this keep happening without killing one of these men if they attack my children again. And you definitely should watch that scene, if anything else, because her acting was so good and it was very impactful. It was like, oh my God, like, I can't even believe that these people are having to go through something like this.
Yeah. Also, I want to say the score in this movie was really, really well done. Same person who did Joker.
Really?
Hilder, I can never pronounce her last name. Not even gonna try. It starts with a G. But she did this and she got an Oscar for the one in Joker.
Oh. Yeah. Well, it was pretty good. I thought it was good music. I liked it. It didn't really stand out to me in any way. And then so somebody else said after Salome said she would become a murderer if she stayed, someone else goes that if they stay there, they're putting themselves in a position of violence. And there would be no way for them to stop themselves from being at war with the men. Like, they, acts of violence is all that they would be able to use to fight back, I guess.
Wait, can you say that again?
Yeah, so sorry. I think it was Agata. Is that what her name was?
Yeah, that was her name.
Agata. Mm-hmm. I think Agata responded to her saying that, like, we are in a place of violence. We are in a position of violence. And there's no way that we could prevent being at war with these men if we stay. Mm. And then Anna's like, we cannot stay and become murderers and endure more violence, and that is why we must leave. So this is when Anna switches kind of over to like, we need to leave. And she says that her home is where her sister, her mother, and her unborn child are, which is, you know, pretty normally said thing. My home is where my heart is.
Yeah, same kind of thing.
Yeah. How do you feel? Where's your home?
Wherever you are.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Glad we had that conversation. Glad we clarified that. So, next, Marike asks Anna how she couldn't hate the child that she is bearing because she is pregnant with a child from her attacker. And she says she already loves the child because it is innocent and beautiful, just as the man who attacked her was when he was born. So she basically argues that like any child is innocent and beautiful inherently, and what makes somebody bad is what they are taught and how what they are they raised. Yeah. And what they do with like the world. Yeah.
Which was an interesting point, I thought.
Mm-hmm. So again, Greta wants to talk about her horses, and everybody laughs because all Greta wants to do is talk about her horses. And she talks about a story of how whenever she goes north of the village, her horses are always lurching around because the road is very bad and her buggy kind of bounces around and she gets really scared. And she said that she only ever felt safe when she focused on the road far ahead of her. And she says that leaving will give the far seeing perspective that they need. And that leaving would be an act of faith and forgiveness. And it is how they can demonstrate their faith. Even though they make fun of her horse stories. They're pretty good stories.
I know, they're pretty good metaphors.
They're pretty good metaphors. And I was right. I think that's the way she coped with it. She was kind of making up metaphors with her horses.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's true. Like whenever you get scared in a moment in life, like if you look out at the perspective of like what it really means and where you're really going.
What's going to happen in the long run.
Yeah, it makes it less stressful. It makes it less overwhelming. If you humble yourself to not think that that exact moment is the deciding moment in the world, you know.
Especially in college. For sure.
That's probably what she was talking about.
Oh, yeah. That was, she was definitely talking about college.
I think anything in life where you're terrified in the moment or something is very overwhelming in the moment, like reminding yourself of your end goals or what really matters or where you're headed, it makes those small anxieties less.
Yeah.
Which I agree with.
More easy to deal with.
Yes, Greta. Ruth and Cheryl, they really knew what they were talking about. Your
Shout
horses.
Out to Ruth and Cheryl, everybody.
Shout out to Ruth and Cheryl, MVPs.
MHPs.
MHPs, most horse people. Isn't it most valuable person? That means most horse person. I think you meant MVH.
That's what I meant.
Most valuable horse person. MVH, that's better. So then Marieke, guess what? Surprise, surprise, she snaps. When they get mad at her for wanting to say. And she asks, who are you for acting like I have a choice? Like everything she has done, she never had a choice.
How did you have time to write all this down?
I'm a very fast typer. You were
typing so fast.
That
was crazy.
I took typing in middle school, and I was super competitive about it.
I don't doubt it.
So I'm a very good typer.
I'm not a good typer. I still
speedy. There's seven pages of notes, and we're on page five.
Wow.
What do you mean look and find? Oh, yeah, you have to look at the keyboard when you type, yes.
Sometimes it depends on the letters, though.
Some I don't know how you survived really college that way. Kids, take a typing class. It's so worth it.
Or else you end up like me.
Well, in the society we live in today, I type way more than I write.
Though. It was like an extra credit in middle school.
Yeah. Why didn't you actually care about it?
Because I was in middle school.
I was in middle school, too.
Well, bully for you.
What does that even mean?
It just means good for you. Like, bleh. Cool.
Bleh. Yeah. Okay. Well, it's your loss, not mine. Moving on.
I type very well. My essays are very good most of the time.
So then, as Marieke, moving on to more important things, not going to lie, I wasn't even listening to the last thing that she said. I don't know what you said.
Wouldn't be surprised.
So Marieke is outraged, and she's yelling at them, and everybody is understanding, you know, this is her acting out of grief, and then they all start to apologize for her, to her, and she kind of is, like, taken aback by it, and her mom, Greta, the horse lady, apologizes to her as well for not protecting her and her children, and how Marieke was forced to forgive for the acts of her husband, even though she didn't want to. She didn't have a choice, and she's just had to come to accept, like, that was her life. And it seems that she has been forced into a position where she doesn't know anything else to do but forgive and try to move on when terrible things happen to her, and that's what she just does.
Yeah,
you know, she's just used to it. So then Marieke's son comes up, and he's very upset because he has a cherry in his nose, as one would be.
As one does. Yeah, I think
very, very understandable.
Yeah, I think I got something stuck in my. I think it was like a Barbie or Playmobil.
You
part
put
stuck
a Barbie in your nose? Barbies are huge.
No. It was like a Playmobil shoe or something stuck in my nose.
Is it still in there?
No, I got it out, obviously.
Did you have to go to the hospital?
I don't think so. I think we were able to.
It's all a blur.
I don't remember anything about it.
I had a cousin who would shove acorns in her nose. Like, it was a problem. She would do it a lot.
She would, like...
She's okay now, though. It was just when she was a kid. I don't know what it is about kids wanting to shove things in their nose. I never did it, of course. I was a very sophisticated child.
Sure.
I never shoved anything in my nose. Moving on. So, she comes up. He's got a cherry in his nose. And she's like, blow it out. And he blows it out. And Ona is like, there's no cherries in the colony. And Marieke is like, her husband, Klaus, sometimes brings them back for town. And they're like, oh, yeah, shit.
He's back. Klaus is back.
Klaus is back.
Santa Claus.
That is not Santa Claus. Hopefully that's not what Santa Claus is like.
Santa Krampus.
Okay. So they realize that they haven't made their decision yet as to stay or leave. And they're like, well, crap, we need to know now. So they start panicking. And it seems that they have made a decision to leave universally. Everybody wants to get out of there.
I do want to see that movie, Decision to Leave.
What?
Sorry, just the way you said it reminded me of the South Korean movie that just came out, Decision to Leave.
Oh, I want to see that too. Yeah. I do want to see that too. It looks good. Back to what I was saying. You interrupted me. So this is when the argument of age comes up. So, like, what age do boys become bad boys or men? Bad, you know what I mean? Boys to men, right? So they said anybody of under the age of 12 should come with. But Salome has a son that is 13, and she fights back on it. So they pull August into it because he is the boy's teacher, and they want to know what he thinks. When is a boy turning into a bad person, able to be bad? I don't know. So he says the boys age 13 and 14 can't hurt women, and that they are rash at that age. Their curiosity can lead to violence, and they don't understand the consequences of their actions and have no impulse control. But he says, despite this, they are still kids and they can be taught to relearn their roles as males in the colony. And he thinks that they should be allowed to leave mm-hmm. with the women. So based off of this, Marieke, of course, snaps back and says something rude. But this time, I think she realizes
yeah.
that it's rude and she apologizes. And you can see she's even surprised that she said it.
Mm-hmm.
She's even taken aback by it. But she realizes, you know, after the compassion everybody has shown her, like, she shouldn't be saying things like that.
Yeah, shout out to Jessie Buckley. She's really good with facial acting, I think.
Yeah, she was great. She was fantastic. So then this is when they decide that the age of 15 is the cutoff. And August says he will stay to teach the boys. So August is not going with them. And then they see Klaus is outside and he's taking the horses, Ruth and Cheryl. Greta's horses, as you know.
Not Cheryl.
The MVHs. So they say, well, what about Ruth? You don't care about Ruth?
No, I'm sorry.
Only Cheryl. So they say that they need to go run to get packed and be ready to leave an hour after sunrise. So they agree to say that they were all quilting if anybody asks, and they spread the word that they're leaving to the other women. And I can't imagine having to decide for an entire colony if they're leaving or staying. Like, that is a huge decision to make for a bunch of women. And all of these women, as they're telling them that they're leaving, they're like, okay, cool.
Like, hey, thanks for letting me know.
Yeah, thanks for the update. Let me go grab my stuff. I'll be ready.
Yeah,
I'll be there. They're not even upset. They're just like, I don't know, maybe relieved that somebody else made the decision and they didn't have to decide. Or they were just confident in the fact that those women were going to make the right decision for them.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of trust and community in it. Like, they were all very supportive of each other going through it. And I think they just knew that they were going to do the right thing. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, when you're in an environment like that where manipulation is standard practice, but you're not really like attuned to that, then you put a lot of trust in the people that you like commiserate with, I guess.
Yeah. What does commiserate mean?
To confide in somebody when you're going through a tough time together.
Oh, okay. So like going through it together, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so Marieke gets back to her house. Klaus is there. And her mom is like, please don't go in there. Like, spend the night with me. And she knows. She knows, like, this is the sacrifice she has to make. And she's like, I have to go because it will draw attention to everybody else and potentially, you know, ruin their escape mm-hmm. or their leaving if Klaus gets suspicious and calls the men to come back. And also, I'm like, where are all these men spending the night? Like, are they sleeping in hotels? Like, there got to be a lot of men. Like, at least 100 men.
Well, I don't think all the men came back. I think it was just Klaus.
No, but only Klaus. But where are the other men doing in the city? Where are they?
Oh, yeah.
Where are they staying? I don't know.
Where do they get the money for that? I don't know.
Yeah, where do they get the money for it? Klaus is bringing the money, and Klaus is spending the night, so I'm, like, suspicious. But so she knows that she's going to get attacked that night, but she has to go home, or they will be suspicious of her. So she makes that self-sacrifice of knowing what's going to happen and to make sure that everybody else is able to get out okay the next day. And then the narrator talks about how crazy it is that they could pack up everything that mattered from their whole lives in just a couple of hours.
But yeah, which is a good point.
Mm-hmm. So this is when Ona starts flirting with August again. She's sitting on the roof and she's like, come stay with me. And they read a map together and he teaches her how to navigate with the stars, even though she already knows how to do it. And he's like, I wish I could teach you something that you don't already know. And she asks what's going to happen to him when the women leave. And that's it. I'm kind of annoyed with her flirting with him all the time, but it's fine. She's a nice lady. He's a nice guy. But she doesn't love him. So so then Marieke.
He is the MVM of the situation.
Yes, MVM. Everybody is just really great. MVM.
MVM.
And then the MVWs, MVHs, all the women.
MVWs for sure.
MVWs. So then Marieke shows up the next day with her daughter, both of them beaten badly. And basically you find out that the husband, Klaus, found out that they had taken the horses to Escape. And he beats them up until they tell him the plan. And she told him that they want to just be entitled to three things. And that women just want their children to be safe. They want to be steadfast in their faith. And they want to think. which I think are pretty reasonable demands. I think that shouldn't be something you should have to ask for.
You think so?
Should be a given right.
Probably.
Probably.
Most deaf.
Most deaf. So I just wonder, like, if August is going to be safe after, like, I wonder if the other men are going to act in rage and blame him for the women leaving. Do you know what I mean? And hurt him or attack him for,
well, how would they know?
Supporting the women. I don't know. I don't know. I guess I assume they would know he didn't come with them to the city. So true. He must have been there with the women.
But he was a school teacher. So I guess he still needed to teach the boys.
Yeah. But why would they want someone to teach their boys that they are wrong and
that rape is bad?
Yeah, but I mean, the men, why would the men like want the August to teach their boys like
different of what the men think is wrong? Yeah.
So then Melvin comes in. Melvin is, as we said, previously went by Nettie, but has now transitioned to Melvin. And he comes in to let them know that everybody is ready to leave. And so his mom finally calls him Melvin. And Melvin, who has been mute this whole time, finally speaks and he says, "Thank you for saying my name."
Oh, I forgot that's what he said.
Yeah. And he finally acknowledges and mm-hmm. is appreciative that his mom has accepted him. And so then Salome finds out that Aaron is missing. Aaron, her son of 13, the one that she had to fight to get the age range differentiated up to 15. So they are very worried that they won't be able to convince him to leave with him. And then so Agata, Melvin's mom, tells August to make a list of good things that the women will want. I didn't understand this part. He made a list of like things like sunshine and buckets and language and women. I guess those are all the good things. I don't know why they did that, but they did. And August gets emotional because Agata tells him that she is proud of him and that his mom would be proud of him. He's very emotional. He's very in touch with his feelings. He's very sensitive. He's a very nice guy. I like him. All the boys should be like him. And so Ona then is upset because they're leaving August. So like, it's like, so do you like him? Like, you're upset to be leaving him behind. But then August yells at her, like, "I will always love you." And she just looks at him and walks away.
I was like,
I know. And then Agata is like, "Oh, Ona loves you.
Don't worry."
And you're
about
like,
it.
Oh, okay. So she does love him. But then Agata adds at the end this little tale. And she's like she loves everyone. I was like, are you kidding me? Really? That wouldn't make me feel any better being in a relationship where you love somebody and they don't
love you back.
That's
like getting a side hug from a girl you got a crush on.
Yeah, backhanded slap. Mm-hmm. So then Sloan shows up and she says that Aaron is in the buggy to August. She's talking to August. And that he is going with her. And we are pretty sure that she has rendered him unconscious.
You saw
and that is why he's going with.
There was one shot of her poofing the little spray thing.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah.
Oh, so she basically is forcing him to leave with her.
Yes.
And she's like, he's my kid. He's coming with me. And I'm like, you know what? Yes. He's a minor. He legally has to do what you say. And I'm pretty sure what you're doing is right. Obviously, only if what she is asking of him is reasonable. Just want to make that preface. So then he tells her that he wants her to make sure Ona and her baby are taken care of, and he gives her a gun, and she's like, why do you have a gun, August? And she's like, were you gonna kill yourself? And she's like, you have important work to do. You need to teach these boys to be men and good men, not evil men. And he really is the only hope for the boys that are left behind, like that they will grow up to be good men. And he tells her that none of them should ever come back. And August tries to give her the minutes. And she says, no, the purpose was for you to take the minutes. And I was kind of confused by that. I'm like, is that just to document like what they said for the men to know or something?
I
didn't really understand what that was. But she says that she will meet him again, which is kind of a nice way of saying like, this isn't the end. Like one day there's hope that the world will be a better place, at least within their colony and their community of people, and that they would be able to be reunited again as a community. That's kind of what she's kind of saying, is there's hope for that. And then you see all the women are lined up. And there was the one woman, Scarface
Johns,
had stormed out at the beginning of the whole movie because she didn't want to debate about it. She didn't want to deal with it. and her daughter and her granddaughter run up at the last minute to leave. So it seems that the only person who stayed is the Scarface woman. And it seems like she's only staying back out of fear of the unknown, it seems. And she would rather stay with the dangerous attackers. And she is the only woman left. So I'm like, I feel like she's going to become a target for the attacks.
Like, you wrote, she will be targeted for sure.
Yeah, I did write that because I'm like, these men, obviously, from what it seems, are unreasonable and irrational. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're the kind of men who would target her and consider her to blame for the actions of all of the other women. Yes. Consider her an image of women as a whole and punish her for something, obviously, that's not her fault. Mm-hmm. And that she shouldn't be punished for it. But it seems like these are the kind of men who would act that way. And then the movie ends. And I'm not going to lie, I would like to have seen what happens after, just because you know these men aren't going to take it well. No. But it doesn't matter how they take it. You know, it's really all about the women in this instance. But it's like, I can't imagine these men are just going to let the women leave, you know, without putting up a fight and being evil dicks.
Yes.
There's no other way to say it.
It wasn't called men talking.
But in reality, it didn't matter what happens next. It mattered, you know, the decision that they made to leave.
Yeah, that they finally had made a decision.
Yeah.
And
just choose.
Not finally, but like,
it was a hard
decision
to make.
They come to a collective agreement.
Yeah. It was a very hard decision to make. So yeah, overall, I thought it was a great movie. I thought it touched on a lot of topics that need to be touched on, and it went through a lot of things that you don't normally think about that you should think about, and different ways to view life and community and companionship and tragedy and trauma.
And trust and aging.
And then the one thing that really got them through was that community, you know, the fact that they were there together and they were working through that together, I think is what was their biggest successful point. I think that's what made them able to escape, you know, and build a better life, was the fact that they worked through it together.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Individually, that would have been a very difficult thing to say, oh, this woman's going to go and I'm going to stay, and have like half stay and half go. That wouldn't have.
It's like it wasn't even a question. It was like the women, as long as they were doing it together, were, you know, they were confident in the decision.
Yeah.
As long as it was a group decision. Because power comes in numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any other fun facts you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, this is the first film from Orion Pictures to be nominated for Best Picture since Silence of the Lambs.
Wow. 31
Year Gap.
Also, you said it was produced by Plan B, which is Brad Pitt's production company
it
as
is.
Well.
Yep. Yes, he's produced a lot of things, honestly. Let me look. Yeah, he's produced The Big Short, Minari, 12 Years a Slave.
Well, he's in The Big Short, isn't he?
Yeah, that's true. He is. Okja. And Moonlight. I didn't know he's produced Moonlight.
He produced Blonde.
Wow. He's produced 60 movies.
Wow. A lot of
The King,
movies.
Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Selma. That's a big movie.
She Said.
Wow.
Good for you, Brad.
Yeah, good job, Brad.
The guy.
Keep it coming. Okay, well, we will see you guys next week. We are talking about the Oscar winners.
Yes.
Reacting to the Oscar winners. We're going to watch them. You guys should watch them too. And we can either be infuriated or happy together. So we'll see.
Probably both.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Okay, bye.
Bye.